heaven forbid we role play, right?
What? Who does that?
Not at all what these games are about.
Well met, adventurers. My name is Lee.
I'm Joe, and welcome to Mage Productions.
For this week, or this month, or whatever, we're back with another system.
Starting strong, you know, I like it.
This one know, day right? out of this year, this where something happens, maybe, maybe not.
You know what?
Do you need to take a minute? Just take a breath?
No, no, it's good. It's good. It's all staying in, and you're it's right. perfect. We have Alex with us, also known as Our Lady of Podcasting, to talk about Through the Breach.
I sure am.
Hello, welcome.
Have you guys heard of Through the Breach before? Or
I
Malifaux?
Have not.
Not at all.
I won't act surprised. And I'm not going to do this in like the bigoted way of like, oh yes, Malifaux is so special and unique. No, just not a lot of people have heard of it. So I'm glad to be here to talk about it.
We are glad to have you because we are always down for learning about something new.
I am nodding. Yes.
And this audio medium, mm-hmm. I like it. I feel like I need to give some disclaimers before I get going. First and foremost, this is a system that has a lot of lore behind it. I will try to address what I can, but I am by no means an expert. In the games that I play, I get it wrong all the time. There's a lot to it. I mean, anything like D&D or any worlds like that, there's just a lot to get wrong. So I'm just avoiding pitchforks in the future. I know I am wrong. Please don't get mad. If you are curious about the system afterwards, please check out Weird Games or the people who've make Malifaux and Through the Breach. Their website has a lot of information about it because they want people to buy their game. So that's a good resource for you. Let's see. And, you know, I talk fast. So if I start going off, someone slow me down. Otherwise.
Okay.
I think best way to describe Malifaux, right? Setting, making it pretty here. Do you remember that really bad movie, Wild Wild West?
Yes. I loved that movie as when I was growing up.
And do you remember that really bad movie, Van Helsing?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I also loved that movie.
Mm-hmm. Imagine these two movies had a love baby.
Yes, please.
Now you have Malifaux.
Yes.
I'm also glad I'm not the only one who loves Wild Wild West. And Van Helsing, I watch both of those way too often as a kid.
Same.
I still own my Van Helsing DVD copy.
Oh,
it's
snap.
Fine. Big brag. Whoa, we got a badass. Oh, I should ask. Can we curse? I didn't even think of that beforehand.
Nope. And I will bleep you out and it's great.
All right. It's good to know.
Sorry. I should have gone through that at the beginning.
No, it's good. That's a question I should have asked. Should have known that about myself. Anyway, so we have this really cool world of like Grimm's fairy tale, but also Victorian, but also Wild West, all shoved into this conglomerate. It is set in alternative Earth in the 1900s. Yay, fun stuff. And the way we get to Malifaux is through a very magical portal. You go on a train, you zip on through in Santa Fe, and then you are in Malifaux proper. It's confusing because they will say, hey, Malifaux, the city, and Malifaux, the world. They didn't get too creative. They being the people like in the world itself, not so much weird. I won't peg that on them. I could, but I won't. And the main city itself is where a lot of the stories take place. But, you know, aesthetic's a setting. We can customize any setting for any rules, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What makes Malifaux stand out is that we don't use dice. We actually use playing cards.
Cool.
Yeah. So there is a main deck that sits in the middle of the table. And I'm going to give you how the game should be played. And I guess that should have been the other disclaimer, is that the way I learned to play is very wrong. Wrong, quotation marks.
Sure.
Because they're guidelines, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the deck in the middle is what everyone pulls from, the Fate Master, the players, and then when that deck's over, you just shuffle it back in and you reuse it. There is one critical success and one critical failure in the entire deck. Wow. So it's really important that you kind of mentally keep track of, oh, wait, did we get that? And those would be the black Joker and the red Joker.
Mm-hmm. How large is this deck?
52.
Full
standard
deck.
Standard deck.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If the, of course, we live in a world where we want to sell stuff, right? So it, we, you can use a normal playing deck. Or if you're a real fan, a real player, you'll get your very own Fate deck. Same
course.
Concept. They just change the suits, right?
Sure.
So Rams equals hearts. Masks are diamonds. Crows are... Ooh, that's the two black suits I get confused. So crows, I believe, are spades and... Or no. Spades, and then we have tomes, which is clubs. There it is. Nailed it.
Yeah.
Or I got it wrong. Da-da-da-da-da. Hey,
you'll have to get the book to find out.
Ooh,
right,
incentive.
It's yes. Mm-hmm. If only they commissioned me for this. What's real bad, guys? I literally have it on sticky note, like right in front of me on my computer monitor.
It's okay. We won't tell anybody.
It's fine.
Right on past it.
Definitely not everyone that listens to this episode.
Nah, they'll never know.
I am not a great resource. I am just doing my job. But as far as that goes, I'd like to consider Malifaux and Through the Breach, in particular, Through the Breach, a creative 3.5 D&D. It's not based on D&D, but if you remember the point system in 3.5 and just all the layers and the crunchy bits, it is a quirky system. There is some left to be desired for it, even in their second edition that they came out with a few years ago. It's just the rulebook isn't always super well organized. But hey, we get there, we chug through it, and then you do like my first table does, and we make up rules because we can't find the rules.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So that's like the basic mechanics of it. Do you guys want to know about character creation first or more about the world? Because this world is a living, breathing world based off the skirmish game.
Mm. I think the world first and then the characters. Let's go big to small.
I agree.
Big to small? Cool.
Yeah.
So Malifaux, the skirmish game, is in its third edition. It just came out this year. The third edition did, obviously. And, you know, it is, when I say it's living, breathing, characters drop in and out. It is your typical war building. You buy points, you buy characters, usually about a 5-man team, some perks and fun stuff in there. That's Malifaux proper. But because the world is so big, they're like, we need to make a role-playing game. So here we are. We have Through the Breach, the role-playing game. I'm going to give the Cliff Notes version of this. And if you have any questions, please stop me and I will clarify.
Okay.
Can do.
So in this alternative Earth, we have the very first breach that opens, thanks to some very hardworking wizards who naturally all die because it's very explosive to open up this gigantic breach.
Like they do.
As they do. Wizards, you know. We go charging forth into this mysterious land, thinking we know what it is, and we kind of do. And we decide to make our own world in it. We discover that in this world, there are stones called soul stones that can supercharge our magic. That's nice. Mm-hmm. But because magic starts getting big, and because these soul stones are kind of a big deal, magic starts becoming bad because too many people can do it. Too many people can use soul stones. Too many people have access to it. And you know what we really need? We need some laws and regulation. We need some bureaucracy. In comes the guild. And depending on what side of things you're on, the guild can be good guys, they can be bad guys. The guild is constantly at odds with the Arcanists, who are the magic users in this world. And the Arcanists are a lot like, you know, people who are going against establishments with their magic things because they're mad at being put down all the time. You'll see a lot of miners join the Arcanist faction because the guild has them under their boot and overworks them and doesn't pay them enough. And they don't get any soul stones for their hard work. So naturally, Arcanists, here we go. This is like your main head-to-head factions that are constantly fighting. Mm-hmm. But in this very first gate that opens in the 1800s, things are starting to brew. Things are going great. And then they're not. The monsters of Malifaux are called Neverborn. And the best way to explain them is that they're like fairies or demons. Both. And if you look at the art, you can say like, oh, yeah, that looks like a succubus. Oh, hey, that looks like a Shakespearean fairy. They are good. They are the original creatures of this land. And how dare they fight back when we charge in, demanding that this is our land now.
Jerks.
Right? Yeah. Clearly, the baddies.
Mm-hmm.
And so they fight back, and they fight back in force, to the point that they annihilate the entire city of Malifaux, kick out one dead body with a gruesome message, basically flipping us the bird, and say, see ya, we're not going to be here anymore. You're not welcome. And the breach closes unexpectedly.
Cool.
Meanwhile, we still have soul stones on this side of the world. Oh, no, hey, soul stones? What a cute name. They're literally powered by souls. So when they go dead, you can actually harness soul stones by being like, oh, hey, dead friend, give me your soul. And putting them in. And then you're able to use that soul for magic further on. When the gates close, these soul stones are used at very rational places, like hospitals. We just store them there because that's a good place to charge soul stones where people die a lot. You know, sometimes orphanages, places where there could be a lot of gruesome deaths. Mm. They are hoarding. And by they, I mean the guild are hoarding these stones and piecing them out. They recently came out with a supplement book called Above the Law, and it has a lot of fascinating information about the guild and how they actually influence different parts of history. So like the guild actually has a part in Napoleon's wars and stuff. And they are good guys, not good guys. Simple as that. And so we are hungry for magic. We are hungry for power. So we want back. We want back to that sweet, sweet Malifaux. We're fighting for it. And then, oh, hey, 100 years later, we have the second opening of the breach. And this is where our game takes place now. Guild is still fighting. Arcanists are still fighting. And then we have other factions coming in too. We have the outcasts, who are like mercenaries, or people who want to cause a little chaos but don't really want to side with one person or the other. We have the Ten Thunders, which are a conglomerate. It's a group that are spies. In this world, I believe it is Vietnam, Thailand, and China that have become one big country. And they're known as the Three Kingdoms.
Cool.
And so they're kind of the main people behind the Ten Thunders. Anyways, spies. That's cool. And we have, let's see, what other cool people do we have involved in this situation? Ah, what's magic without a little necromancy? We have resurrectionists. And this is going to be your very classic Frankenstein kind of situation where they are digging up bodies. They are using their magic to bring people back to life. They are not liked. Then we have magic users, right, who are just kind of flinging spells, having a jolly good old time. They don't even like resurrectionists because they're creepy. They're playing with dead things. No one likes that. That's bad. You can just don't. Just don't.
I guess.
And like the last really big faction that I haven't mentioned yet is the Bayou faction, which on the outskirts of the city of Malifaux and towards the edge of the map, you have the Bayou. And again, what's a game without kobolds or goblins or something of the like? They're called gremlins in this world. They're little green dudes, and they are loved and hated, we'll say. There's some people in the system or in the community who love gremlins. They think they're the coolest thing around. There's other people who can't stand them. It's very divisive, and I'm a middle ground. Like, they're just there doing their thing. Let them live their best life. Who cares? They kind of started as a joke because they were mimicking other masters. So, you know, when you're leading a skirmish army, you need to have a commander. So they're like, oh, hey, here's this commander, but let's make a joke version of it. And so gremlins were like this kind of mocking their real system. And that's like the major players of the world. That's kind of what's going on. There is now a war happening Earthside that's blowing up. So it's like the badness for Malifaux is breaching over to Earth. There is a lot going on, which makes this a world incredibly fun. I think it's incredibly fun to play around in, because one game, like one campaign, could just be focusing on the guild and just the guild, and you'll still want more answers about the guild. There's a lot to it.
That's just, it
speechless.
Sounds so
I like
cool.
It.
Yeah.
It does.
When I played this game the very first time, I was just so blown away by the uniqueness of it.
Mm-hmm.
The card system itself is really fun, but just how heavy of a world they have, like how created and fleshed out it is.
Right.
It was just so smart that they fleshed this out for the skirmish game. For the skirmish game. And they're like, oh, Well, yeah, it's obvious we should have a role-playing game. Obviously.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen the minis for the game and, like, you know, like I do. They're amazing. Yeah. But I mean, I never looked into it. And I never really, like, went beyond, like, these are super cool looking. But knowing all this, it's just like, I want to dive in. It's so cool.
I remember seeing the first real round of miniatures that were released. I worked in a comic shop for 10 years. It was a great time. And I remember seeing those very first boxes come out. And I'm like, wow, those women have proportions.
They do. And clothes.
And clothes. Sure. Some clothes. Kind some of.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
And I remember thinking it was so cartoonish and outlandish, but also lended a weird amount of charm for what it was, mm-hmm. and really made it stand out against, you know, Warhammer and other games at the time. Mm-hmm. They've toned down some of it. Their art has gotten better, different. Mm-hmm. Depends on your taste and style. Yeah, I don't want to tell someone that they have a bad taste. I mean, I could, but I won't.
Sure. And I think their art is absolutely brilliant, and it really leads to a lot of cool thoughts. I totally lost where I was going there.
I saw you like buffering there. I did. It's fine. Like,
it's cool. It's good. It's good stuff. Yeah.
And Summer, yeah, it's a cool system. It's unique and it's different. And it's clearly someone's love project. Someone put a lot of love into this writing of this.
Nice. So tell us about character creation.
I would love to. So, yes. If I wasn't already in love with this game because of the aesthetic of it all, the character creation is a lot of fun. To find your stats for your character, you do a tarot spread. With your playing deck, you put out, it's not quite a Celtic cross, but it is definitely a plus sign, one in the middle, left, right, up, back. And you read the stats first, going from center and then clockwise out, and then you spin back in counterclockwise, tightening it back up. When you do it on the clockwise, on the spin out, that's when you get your hard numbers. That's where like the real crunchy bits come in. Mm-hmm. Two cards represent your abilities. So our typical, you know, dexterity, strength, etc. Mm-hmm. And then two cards represent skill points. And it has a nice balance to it. So if you get a really high card, you might have high points, but you also have less options for the skills.
Sure.
And you'll see in the character creation too, your abilities, you might get negatives. And you think, oh God, I have so many negatives in my abilities. I feel like our commonplace of D&D makes it think negatives bad. You don't want negatives. Negatives are important in this game for when you're picking talents or feats, because a lot of talents require you to have negative skills. It's their way of balancing out. It's like, yeah, sure, you may not be able to dodge very well, but look at this cool thing you can do throughout the game because of it. This cool ability because you can't, because your grace is low.
That's neat.
That is really cool.
And that's like the crunchy bits, right? Simple. You get your stats. You assign them where you need to assign them. On the way back in, however, is what you earn as your destiny steps. And destiny are ways for the game to progress. If you don't have a precon, the DM would be like, all right, let me see everyone's destiny steps. And we're going to chunk through this in 4 game sessions. Because that's how many destiny steps there are, or 5, apologies. So a whole campaign could only be 5 games. And the game's kind of built to be only a 5 game system. Because what happens when you achieve a destiny step, or you complete a destiny step, is that you get superpowers. They're called manifested powers. And the DM will sit with you and be like, hey, based on the story so far, and what you've done, let's make this superpower. And maybe the player's like, no, I definitely want to do this. I want to be able to shoot through walls with magic bullets. Okay, sounds good. Let's find a mechanic for it. The one that came up in our game was our bounty hunter wanted to be able to shoot people, his friendlies, and have them teleport next to him.
Cool.
So to get them out of danger, he could shoot them and they would just appear right next to him. It was a fun dynamic for the short amount of time that we were able to play with that functionality. But the destinies themselves, words are hard. The destiny steps themselves are very vague. I'm going to pull up that same character's destiny steps, all 5 steps of it. Here we go. Beautiful reading voice. After the quiet of 1,000 nights falls upon your ears, an idea will betray you, and you'll find the other lands on the day she dies. Escape is possible. Freedom is inevitable. And you will splinter the white door. It's like this very prophecy kind of feeling. Mm-hmm. That's every GM's dream, right? Yeah. Oh, here's this really vague concept that I need to make a part of your character, but I can do it my way too.
Yeah.
So there's five steps. And the idea is like, okay, the Quiet of a Thousand Nights. I was mean to my player. I killed off someone. And I am a huge fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And there's an episode in Buffy the Vampire Slayer where her mom dies. Spoiler. And but the whole episode's quiet. There's very little talking. And it's just talking. The importance is the silence of that episode. So I try to relay that into my own episode or my own gaming session. So Quiet of a Thousand Nights. Someone died. Boom. That was my inspiration for it. The next one was an idea will betray you. He makes a ton of bad ideas. So that's super easy. I'm like, oh, let's pick a unit number of these. And that could be your next Destiny step. The games I play are much longer than five sessions. I can't control myself. So these are, I try to make it more of a focus of, hey, it is player A's turn for a Destiny step. We're going to focus on that for a story arc. Mm-hmm. Pull it out instead of making it feel rushed and maybe out of place. Because I've played in games where you're like, nope, this is your Destiny step. We're going to make it happen today, no other day. It's not fun. It's okay. But it's not fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. That kind of makes it feel a little forced.
It does. Yeah. Well, and like, no matter what, like, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I know the result.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. So that's like the... That's how you get your stats, right? We care about numbers. We care about our stats. We care about what our characters can do. The skill set is also very typical 3.5. I use that as a reference since I feel like a lot of people have that as a reference. Mm-hmm. And that's like, oh yeah, deceive. Let's go ahead and throw in some academics, I guess. Let's throw in some magic. It's just basic skills. There's sure. a two-page list. Nothing, in my opinion, too noteworthy or stand out for as a skill set. But then you get to pick your pursuit. And I know some systems like to punish you for multi-classing. This one does not. In a way, it encourages you to have multiple classes, or in the system, they're called pursuits. The one trick is that when you are focusing on one pursuit, you can't use your other abilities from your other pursuits.
Hmm.
When you're leveling up your character, you can... It's step by step. And this is also nice because not every character will be the same. So if I was playing a mercenary and you two were playing mercenaries, we could all end up having a different build just based off of how we leveled them up. You sure. usually get an either or option and then a general talent the next level.
Mm-hmm.
So there's it'd be highly improbable that all three of us would pick the same build.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which makes it also sometimes in a game, you're like, oh, man, everyone wants to play the rogue. Everyone can play the rogue. And still be vital and like support the team.
That's
bizarre.
Great.
Amazing. Right?
Yeah.
Just a great mechanic to have it fleshed out. And that way no one's left behind or feeling like they have to play the healer. You can do whatever, man.
Nice.
And so pursuit talents stay with the pursuit. So one pursuit's called the academic. Another one's a dabbler, which is what they call their magic users. So when I decide like, okay, this game session, I'm going to be an academic. I can still use my spells, but any cool bonuses I get from my dabbler nonsense, I can't use because those are dabbler pursuits. I'm in my academic pursuit. But there are also general talents that get applied no matter what. So that way you're never completely on your own or relying on one particular pursuit. It's that it's like, here's a little flavor because you're focusing in on this.
Okay.
Let's see, what other fun things can I talk? Again, remember when I said this is a quirky system?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot I could talk about, but I could feel like it's also overwhelming unless you're playing.
I can see that. I can
fair.
See that.
Very fair.
Super fair.
You had a question. I saw a chin tap.
I'm curious as to how do you pick which pursuit you're going to pursue?
So... You know, there's some classes that are very obvious, like, hey, I want to play a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be a guard. That is the most clear, direct when you're looking at abilities. That's what I want to play. Sometimes you may pull up stats and you realize afterwards, oh man, I should not have been a gunslinger. My intelligence is a -3. I need intelligence as a stat to shoot my gun. Definitely have that in my group. And it's super fun. And it's becomes an ongoing joke because he's supposed to be a really big bounty hunter. He's supposed to get all of his targets. And now it's like, maybe his stories aren't completely true. Watching him in combat, he misses almost all the time.
Aww.
But like when he hits, usually because of fate, and when you're pulling cards to decide how your abilities go out, he usually rolls or flips really high. So it works out. But it's also funny that sometimes you're like, yeah, I can min-max this, or I'll pick what feels fun.
Yeah.
There are plenty of pursuits to pick. I considered listing them all out, but I was like, we would be here a little bit, and people would tune out after that fourth or fifth one.
Sure.
Some of the cool ones I like, though, are Pioneer. So the idea that you are a pioneer that grew up in Malifaux, or grew up on the pioneer of Earthside, and so you're a rough and tumble kind of guy that's not really charismatic. Great. Wonderful. We got a class for you. There's one that's a tinkerer, and literally the whole point is that you create these little machines that you can throw out and like attack people with.
Oh, that's awesome. Really fun.
Yes.
And I really liked how they did our classic Bard archetype.
Mm-hmm.
The person who's going to be your buff and may not do a whole lot of damage, maybe, depending. They call him the Overseer. And this is someone who might be managing a storefront. Maybe they're the foreman at a mine. They are the person who is in charge at any given time. And their abilities are stuff like, hey, I flipped really high. Any of you can use my card at any given point.
Cool.
Yeah, so nice. It's a way to do buffs that isn't just like inspiration dice or yeah, here, take plus sure. three. It's you get to share my resources.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's like three or four supplemental books, too, that expand further. One of my favorite characters was an illusionist, and it's just stage magician. Straight up, 100% based off that. And they do a good job of making sure that each class feels different and that nothing really overlaps on each other. And hey, if you max out and you want a prestige class or an advanced pursuit, we have stuff for you. But those advanced pursuits are kind of a pain to get. So if you want to be an elite fighter in the guild, you have to be recruited by someone. You have to do X, Y, Z, and they list out all the requirements to continue on in that path. But it's not saying to be this elite guild person, you have to be a guild guard. You can be recruited in elsewhere.
Hmm.
So there's some flexibility to it, and it's really just what your heart says. You know, maybe you wait till you're done with your tarot deck to decide because of stats. Maybe you go into it thinking, I don't care what the stats are. I am going to play a performer. And I work at the Star Theater with the famous burlesque dancers there. Story, story, story.
Sure.
Does that answer? I hope.
Yes. Yes, it does. That's good. Awesome. I like that.
So yeah. The last like important thing I'd say about your character creation is that you get to create something called a cheat deck or a twist deck.
Mm. Okay.
Because you're playing with 52 cards. And doesn't it suck when you roll a 3? You have a deck of cards that's 13 cards per person that you build for yourself, and you have a hand at any given time, and you're like, oh, I see I failed that flip, but actually I'm going to cheat fate. And you're able to throw down your own card and make it go in your favor. Or maybe you want to fail that roll for or fail that flip for some reason. You know, I've definitely have people cheat lower, and then me as a competitive perfectionist, I'm like, why? Why would you ever do something like that? And they're like, for the story. That's genius. Thank you.
I love it.
Heaven forbid we role play, mm-hmm. right?
What? Who does that?
Not at all what these games are about.
I should say the person who does that is also the person who has a -3 intelligence and is a shooter. So
he
has a lot of fun with his characters.
Yeah.
He goes with the punches very well. So the cheat deck, I would say, is the secondary really important thing about Malifaux, because it's more than just flipping cards. It's that you have a way to manipulate it to be the way you want it to be, because those suits also play an impact, too. So the ones that I definitely correctly rattled off, for sure, no doubt. Most primarily, they affect magic. Magic's really hard to cast in this game, too. Most of them require a flip of 10 or higher. And then on top of that, you have to have the correct suit.
Ooh.
So you might need a 10 of masks to get it. So maybe you have the 10, but you don't have the masks. Bummer, yo. If you don't have the cheat deck or the cheat hand to throw in, you're screwed. Nothing you can do about that. It's just, it fizzles. Womp womp. But then you could also say, oh, no, no, no. My cheat card, I definitely have something higher in the same suit. Or you could replace a suit, or you could just replace a number. I found that cheating works the best for magic.
Mm-hmm.
Because, boy, it's hard. But it's also just easy stuff like, no, no, no. I definitely want to seduce that guard. We need to make this happen.
It's going to happen.
But I think that's my Cliff Notes overview of the game. Maybe the last thing I could talk about is how game sessions play out.
That was just what I was about to ask you. Could you walk us through like an overview of a game session, kind of see how it works?
Yeah. Brain twins. Yes. Hoo boy. So there's three distinct parts of a game session. Whether you're doing a very short version of it or you're doing a long drawn out version. Session zero will be your prologue. You are setting up the story. You might have some skill checks. It might just be kind of role-playing and talking to NPCs. It might be laying out the story. It's meant to be short, quick, give you a flavor of the game that's about to happen. At the end of the prologue, that's when you pick what pursuit you're going. So you could listen to the prologue and be like, oh man, I don't need Punchy McGee. I need to be book smart this time. So I'm going to focus on my book smart, whatever that would be, pursuit. No. Rather than going into it and then thinking, dang it, I should have picked this instead if I had only known. So that's called the prologue. And then you get into the actual game session, which is called the story. And in the story, that's the meat and bones. That's where all the good stuff happens. That's your typical game. That's where you're saving the princess. That's where you're doing an escort mission, whatever it so is. And it plays out like I'd say a very typical D20 system kind of game plays out. You're doing checks, you're doing role playing, you might be doing combat if that's your thing, which, mm-hmm. by the way, combat is a heck of a thing in this system because you have very few hit points. I think the most I've seen is 6 or 8 hit points, oh. And that's like a tank. And monsters hit for 4 to 5 hit points in a single hit.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oof.
Life in Malifaux's hard.
That's awesome.
Oof.
And they don't really have good death rules, in my opinion. They have unconscious rules. But they don't really say what happens if you go unconscious. So I've had to, you know, piece together some things every now and again. Because, boy, I have definitely... My very first encounter, I didn't realize my monsters were going to be so scary. You look at the stats and think, oh, yeah, what are the chances? They were high, and I definitely killed someone very quickly, and I felt awful because they had put so much time into this character.
Oh, no,
they're dead.
Oh, no.
Cool. We brought them back as a ghost, because that's fun.
Nice.
Makes sense.
It was an advanced pursuit. It was a requirement that your character died, and you came back as a ghost, and now you're on a revenge path.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, they have a lot of flexibility in their system. But as far as like the combat goes, it's Fate Master flipping against the player character. And, you know, I'm flipping. They're flipping to make sure that their defense beats my attack. Very prototypical in that sense. And then at the end of that game session, whether it's actually the end of your Destiny step, maybe you're just pausing because you've already played for 5 hours. And boy, do you need pizza. you decide to come back. So be it. Whenever the story point is actually done, though, you go into the third phase, which is called the epilogue. And that's where you level up. And leveling up, pretty fun, too, because instead of you just sitting there with your book, maybe min-maxing, maybe not, you set up a table and you're supposed to go, hey, wow, I really noticed that character Joe Schmo used a lot of this ability. I think you should consider that as an ability check or an ability to advance. And as a table, you decide which 3 abilities they are able to level up. Apologies, which 3 skills, because skills and abilities are different. Which 3 skills to level up. If you have the experience points, great. If not, well, you can save those experience points and use those in the middle of a game session. You don't have, what's a good one, forgery? You can use 1 experience point on the fly to suddenly be proficient in forgery.
Huh.
Oh.
So some people like hoard their experience points so that way they have a lot of low skills whenever they need them.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, people will be like, okay, cool, I got an experience point. And that's typical. At the epilogue, you usually only get 1 experience point. If there's a Destiny step completed, you might get an additional one. Or if the Fate Master is feeling particularly friendly, they might be like, no, 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 you guys did really good XYZ role playing, problem solving. You threw me through a loop. You made me come up with too many NPC names. Here's an extra experience point. And I really like the community aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Of it kind of being required that you pay attention to other people while they're playing.
Yeah, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. I wish I could say the rest of the game dynamic is something beyond and amazing. It's not. It's a role playing game. Kick down the door, kill some monsters, flirt with the bar people.
Sure.
Make it what you want.
Yeah.
Nice.
I like the honesty of that.
Yeah.
You know, I
when it comes down to it, like, mm-hmm. it's
brass tacks.
A system's only so much. Like, it's only in how you interpret the rules. The rest of it, I mean, it's pretty much all the same.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. You're there in a fancy setting, pretending to not be you for a hot minute.
Exactly. So what is your favorite part of the system?
Ooh. Okay. I've been DMing, GMing, FMing, whatever version of this we want to use, for a while. And this is the first system I felt really confident in telling the kind of stories I want to tell, because I like creepy horror stories. Those are my favorite. And there's a lot to this world that lets me do that. And it doesn't, it's not like you have to force it. It's just like, nope, and here's the creepy, because the creepy is already here. The fact that there's so much to work with in the world and doesn't have some of the other restrictions, I feel, and I say restrictions in that when people play certain role-playing games, they're like, I want to have this kind of experience all the time, no matter what table I'm at.
Yeah.
This is just too much. There's no way, I don't think I've ever played the same Malifaux game, whether I've been running it or playing it, it has had a different feel, has had a different focus, and there's just so much to explore. And for me, that really stands out and makes it fun to play.
Nice.
Yeah. That's real nice.
I think one game we played as these mercenaries that are more about like gathering knowledge than anything else. And so like I ran a team, they're called Freikorps. And so sure, they beat people up, but also they're really interested in Neverborn history. So, like, that's their focus. Mm-hmm. A game I'm running soon is going to focus on the Illuminati, or at least the Malifaux Illuminati, cool. And seeing how they control all of Malifaux. I've done a very guild-specific storyline before. It's just, they always feel completely different.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. That makes all the difference, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
So, what kind of stuff do you guys look for? Like, what's jumped out at you as far as the system?
I like the feel of it. I like the like we as Earth people have done this thing and we found this place and we're like, well, that's ours now. And that place is like, no, actually. And then, yeah, I just like that aspect of like there is that turmoil built in. And then within the turmoil is other, you know, turmoil. And it's there and it's available to interact with, but everything seems to be continuously interacting with each other around the world. And that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice that you don't have to necessarily know everything about the bayou
to play it,
or you don't have to know every little piece of the lore. You can just be like, nope, this is where I'm focusing.
Sure.
Cause it's still going to spin. Yeah. The drama is mm-hmm. still happening.
Yeah.
I really like the characters, and like a big thing for me is figuring out how to build what I want to play and what I want my character to do. So that kind of the constructive multi-classing, I really like that, because that is one huge drawback in D&D. Is like, okay, well, I want to throw in some rogue. Okay, well, you're going to start with level one rogue where you get nothing. So go ahead and focus on rogue for like 5 levels and then you'll get something cool.
Yeah. But in contrast to that, you're going to ignore your other class.
That's true.
And then you lose out on a lot of potential while everybody else is now level 10 and they've got all this cool stuff and you've got 2 level 5 characters pushed together.
But it sounds like, well, how many experience points does it take to like level things up in this game?
So the experience points are used for your skills. When you level up, it's more like, hey, end of the game, they call it a step up of your pursuit. So technically, if you're picking a new pursuit, you do start at 0, but that doesn't necessarily put you far behind. Where a lot of your power comes from is those destiny steps. That's like a lot of your main focus. Even if you start at step 0, for an ability, you still get to pick a new general talent. And it's not like picking a step zero general talent. It's all of them. You could do whatever you want. And I wouldn't say that necessarily any of the step ups are, or at least not many of them, because, you know, once you get to level 10, quote unquote, you want to do something cool.
Yeah.
But the intermix point between that, there's a lot of overlap. So, hey, here's this ability from level 2 at level 6 that you maybe didn't pick.
Sure.
So it does start you at that 0 point, but I don't feel it starts you at that disadvantage where D&D is just like, yep, you don't get anything cool as a rogue until level 3 to 5. Have fun with that. Where this definitely has more like, as soon as you jump into it, you may be step 0, but you still get something from it.
Yeah.
And I think that's that good. Like picking which class you're going to use in the session kind of balances out with that. Well, you can't use anything from the other pursuit. It's like, okay, well, I know that this one's going to be really research heavy, so I'm not worried about my fighting pursuit right now. I'm going to worry about this and advance this one. So,
right.
I think that helps balance that out pretty like well that. From what I'm
I
hearing.
Like that aspect.
I do too.
Yeah.
You're here.
The whole system just sounds amazing. And it sounds like there's just so much to it. And it just huge and vast and beautiful and amazing. Yeah, it's a
chunky boy.
It's chunky.
I would recommend that this should not be baby's first role-play game. If you're very excited about it and you've never played any role-playing games, I do not suggest it. You don't have to listen to me. But the rules are just a little weird, and it's hard sometimes even with context to, like, gaming context, be like, wait, why the heck am I doing this like this? Wouldn't it make way more sense to do it? Like, why? They have a reason for the madness, I promise. It just doesn't always easily click.
Yeah.
And it's fun. I would be totally, you guys, I'm not worried. You all, you're fine. It helps, even if the one person at the table doesn't know the rules, like, entirely. As long as they're confident in the rules they're saying. Consistency, right? Yeah. As long as you're consistent with how wrong you are, it's the new rule.
Yes, that is totally fair. So if people want to learn more about the system, where can they find that information?
Sure, yes. So weirdgames.net is their website, and they have a few different options, whether you want to find out about Malifaux or Through the Breach, and they have nice, well-articulated pages with art for the factions and the history. If you are a fan of podcasts, can I share their podcast?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Again, I'm of no part of it. It's just because this was such a living, breathing world and continues to be that in their rule books, they have little stories. And so Weird as a company has been like, yeah, let's read those out loud. And so they have read out loud almost at this point, almost all their stories that they've ever published.
Oh, my gosh.
So you can go through all the history, the lore, the masters, everything that they've ever made for this system. Is available as a podcast called The Breachside Broadcast.
Nice.
And
I'm totally going to listen to that.
Also, Schlep my own show.
Yes.
I do a Through the Breach actual play podcast. If you haven't or you couldn't tell throughout this, I'm a little wibbly wobbly on some of the rules. It's not exactly how the rule book should say. I'm making a podcast. Mm-hmm. It's about the show. Don't go to it for the rules, but if you want more of what the concept and what it kind of rolls out wise as far as role playing goes, it's called Soul Story, and we'd love to have you.
That's
also, you
awesome.
Guys talked about having characters. If you want to roll characters sometime, let me know, and I'll throw you in as NPCs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 100%.
Twist your arm.
Yeah.
Oh no. I guess if I have to,
you're gonna have to tell me at least twice.
Okay. I mean, I'll beg, but not on air.
Cool.
Okay, cool. Cool.
I'm good with that.
We're almost done. So we'll get there in just a minute. If people want to reach out to you, talk to you, find out more about all the cool stuff that you have going on, where can they find you?
Sure. You can find me on any social media at Roll for Alex, or you can find my network at NSR Podcasts.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us about Through the Breach.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for having. I like to nerd out. This is fun.
Yeah. That was great. Mm-hmm.
Good. Yay. Thanks for having me. Yeah. I really appreciate
thanks for being on.
Of course. Thank you for coming.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you would like to interact with us, you can find us on Twitter at @mage_podcast or check out our website, mageproductions.com.
Or if you just want to tell other people how much you love the show and that they should listen, you can leave us a 5-star review, go and review us wherever you get your podcast from. We really love to see those and read what you think.
And we would like to give a huge shout out to our partners and sponsors, SoNerdWear.com, a place to find fun clothing and accessories tailored for tabletop geeks and nerds everywhere. They're also on Twitter at SoNerdWear. So you can go to SoNerdWear.com and search for Mage Productions to find all of our cool swag. And then once you find everything, and you can use code MAGE to get 10% off your entire order.